When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made-safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 20.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our almost anniversary season, if you will, Season 20. It's also the 5th year anniversary of the show itself, and we have got what I believe will be our best season yet in terms of many changes, in terms of new introductions, and in terms of a lot of new surprises. Firstly, welcome back, and I have missed talking to you guys weekly so much it's untrue. And our debut episode today, as we've mentioned previously, is going to be a follow-up from one of our most talked about and discussed episodes ever, The Demon on My Shoulder, which was sent in to us from Alex a few seasons ago. Now, I would suggest, if you've not already done so, to go back and find that episode. It was Season 15, Episode 5, and re-listen before you listen to today's debut episode for Season 20. Although certainly not essential to do so, it will definitely give you a better understanding of what we're about to discuss. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there are quite a few changes for Season 20 moving forward. I'm going to run through them very briefly now, and then we will do our Patreon shout-out, of course. So, if you wish to just jump to Alex's story, I would suggest, for this occasion, maybe jumping to around the 8-minute mark, which is when I expect Alex's story to begin with what we have to cover. However, before you do so, I will start with probably the most fundamental change we've made, and that is when you submit your experience, you need to do so via the submission form on the website, which is thedarkparanormal.com, and you will see there a section to submit your experience. There will also always be a link in the show notes that you can just click on, and it will take you right there. So, although contact at The Dark Paranormal is still available for you to email, for things like feedback or suggestions for Dark Realms episodes, however, if you send an experience through to that email address, we will likely return it to you and ask you to submit via the website. And the initial reason for doing so was, as I've mentioned in the last season, you will have noticed, last season had 9 episodes instead of 10, and a previous season also included 9 episodes instead of 10. The reason for this is when somebody has submitted an experience, I've read it out, we have got into some legal back and forth, which has led to an episode not being able to be put out, which in essence means that you as the listener suffer and receive less experiences per season. God forbid, but there may be an occasion when that happens more than once in a season. And then instead of a 10 episode season, we may have a 2, 3 or 4 episode season, which just isn't viable. By doing it via the website, there's simply a tick box which says that you are allowed, you have the full permissions to submit that story. And as an offshoot from that, it will also allow us to potentially use your experience if we ever decide to, for example, release a book. But that was an offshoot of the offshoot, if you will. The main thing is that we get 10 episodes to you that cannot be removed. And also from my perspective, it means I don't have to bypass every episode via a legal person. in order to ensure it can reach your ears. With this being an anniversary type of season, both 5 years in as a show and 20 seasons in, we are looking to do something as a bit of a gift or surprise each and every week. For example, we would normally release a Dark Bites episode before the start of a season. However, instead we chose to interview one of the most renowned paranormal authors out there in Ruth Roper Wild and put that out a few days before the release of season 20. And I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed doing it. Some of these great surprises and changes mean a little bit of a switch around in format. Therefore, our first episode of Dark Realms will release to our Patreons a week today, as in a week Friday, and it will go out to everyone else of our wonderful listeners on the Monday following. And that's to create some space for something truly new that we're going to add to the overall brand. Exciting things to come, but let's move on to our wonderful new team members over at Patreon. By showing your support through Patreon, you allow us to make this show a better experience for you. You'll note we're not a Spotify-only podcast, we're not an Audible podcast, we're not a Wondery podcast, we're an independently created podcast that still manages to be one of the most downloaded paranormal shows out there, thanks to you guys. You are making the independent individual podcasters hold their own against podcasts with hundreds of thousands of dollars behind them, fronted by celebrities, and you guys have made that possible. And that's each and every one of you, Patreon or not, every single listener out there, so thank you. But when you become a Patreon, you allow us to look at other avenues and explore different ways to grow the podcast. Not only that, but you will receive each and every episode on this feed, both ad-free and before everyone else. For example, this debut episode for season 20 was heard by our Patreons on Wednesday. Not only do you receive the early ad-free episode, you also can gain access to Dark Bites, which is our Patreon-only podcast released every single week of the year, even on the downtime between seasons. Plus, you can gain full access to the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites, which is well over 100 hours of Patreon-only content that will be experiences that you haven't heard, that you can binge at your own leisure. Think of it as your own little paranormal library that you can dip in and out of anytime you wish. And that's not to mention the best thing about the Patreon, which is, in my opinion, the community itself. When you sign up, you're joining a group of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts who are basically the salt of the earth when it comes to kind, considerate debates about paranormal experiences, whether they believe in the story or not. It certainly is a place that has blown my mind in terms of how these things normally work when you see them online, and I would suggest it, as a fan of the paranormal, to anyone looking to join a group of people who aren't interested in hierarchy or alleged paranormal experts. It genuinely is a safe space. So if that sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have: Rach, Paula, Jessie L, Tammy, Marlin OK, Paula Greco, Chris, Jeff Chalfa, Nurtured Online, Tia Schreier, Amrutha Mirinali Alaya, Flower Mama, Jolene Walker, Alicia Tiffin, Sally Whitlow, Hayley Bacar, Maddie Rylance, Hannah Johnson, Joel Badanes, Anastasia Green, Jess the Historian, Rosemary Bernard, and Jenny Lee. Genuinely thank you guys from the bottom of my heart. You allow the show to keep going and keep evolving. And if this sounds like something you'd like to be part of, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, after what feels like an eternity, it's great to say, please lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. As we hear all about Demon on My Shoulder, The Return. I never planned on writing back to you, but a recent tragedy made the decision for me. I had hoped the demon that resided on my shoulder had finally left me, but sadly, I no longer believe that to be the case. You read my original experience in Demon on My Shoulder, Season 15, Episode 5, and I want to thank you for sharing my story in a way that made me feel validated and respected. In turn, I want to extend the same gratitude to the listeners. I was terrified of being judged, of my story being dismissed as fantasy. But this community has been nothing but supportive. And for that, I am truly grateful. At the end of the episode, you asked some questions that lingered in my mind. I'll do my best to answer them. Where did this come from? Well, looking back now, I truly believe that the immense trauma leading up to Jack's diagnosis, along with the overwhelming emotions that consumed me, created the perfect environment for what I now know are named the Alcea to manifest. It was as if my suffering became their nourishment, allowing them to take hold and thrive within my pain. You asked, how did it get brushed away by Annie? I don't believe Annie simply brushed it away. Rather, I think her kindness, her unwavering support, and the relief she brought me in those darkest moments caused a rupture in the cycle of my grief. Her presence made it harder for the Alcea to feed on me. But when we were at Disneyland Paris and my emotions surged again, desperate for everything to be perfect for both Jack and Ben, that fragile barrier cracked open once more. The Alcea, always lurking, seized the opportunity to sink back into the wounds of my sorrow. You asked, why did I feel a weight lift when the priest made the cross on my back? This, I believe, ties into my previous answer, but with something more. Some say love has the power to heal, to guide us toward light even in our darkest hours. You know I'm not a religious person, yet in that exact moment, I needed something greater than myself to believe in. The priest's compassion, his quiet but unwavering faith, became a force stronger than my pain. And in that act, the simple yet deeply human gesture of care, I think the Alcea lost its grip on me, even if just for a while. That's why I felt lighter. As if a burden I'd carried for so long had suddenly began to lift. You asked, why could Bex sense it? Well, that's a mystery I cannot fully explain. There are people in this world with incredible, unexplainable gifts, and I truly believe Bex is one of them. You asked, what is the entity? At first, I was hesitant to seek the answer. I've always believed that giving something a name will give it power. It gives it a face, a history. And you may not like what you will discover. But at the same time, understanding something can offer a level of control. And I desperately needed that. For days, I buried myself in research. I combed through countless websites, explored different belief systems, different religions, all in the hope I would find something that fit. But sadly, nothing did. The more I searched, the more obsessive I became. I wasn't sleeping. My mind was drowning in possibilities, but none of them felt right. Then, Mary, bless her patience, suggested I take a step back. She told me to walk away for a bit, to clear my head and return with fresh eyes. And I reluctantly agreed. It was shortly after that when my father called me. My father is not a believer in the supernatural. I would never tell him what I was truly going through, but he's incredibly intelligent. So I approached the subject carefully. I told him I was researching demons and entities from different cultures, and I asked if he knew anything. As expected, my question was met with a barrage of questions. Why? How? What for? I cut him off mid-sentence with an entirely unrelated thought. I was christened Church of England, wasn't I? There was a pause before my father answered. Then, to my surprise, he told me that I wasn't always Church of England. I'd only been christened that after my parents divorced. Originally, I'd been christened Greek Orthodox. And in that moment, everything clicked. I'd been looking in the wrong place, searching amongst the wrong lineage. The second I ended the call, I went straight to my laptop, I typed in Greek demons, and was instantly met with hundreds of results. I started scrolling, digging through pages of mythology and folklore. Eventually, I landed on one that sent a chill through my body. A group of demons known as the Alcyon. These beings are the personifications of suffering, manifestations of pain, misfortune, conflict, murder, lies, even forgetfulness. They are related to Oesis, the Greek goddess of misery, and Penthos, the god of mourning. Their mother is Eris, the goddess of discord and strife. There are six Alcyon, and I believe all of them in some way are responsible for my anguish. They are Lype, the personification of pain, grief, and distress, Anya, personification of distress, sorrow, and boredom, Aquos, personification of anguish, Lupa, the demon of pain, grief, and distress, Akos, a demon of the same suffering, and Anya, a demon of grief, sorrow, and trouble. I did not know where this revelation was going to take me next, but for the first time, I felt like I was no longer searching in the dark. I was dumbstruck by what I'd found. As I read their descriptions, I felt as if I knew these beings intimately, like I was merely scrolling through their Instagram bios. But one detail didn't fit, the way they were depicted. The Alcyon are often portrayed as sorrowful women, yet the entity I had encountered left me with what I could only describe as claw marks. I continued searching, looking for visual interpretations of them. As I sifted through the countless images, I noticed a recurring theme. These women were frequently shown with large birds, often hawks or falcons. Some had these birds perched on their right shoulder, while others watched as their birds attacked unsuspecting victims. That had to be it. These birds must have been responsible for the claw marks. Now it all made sense. Now, I know it may sound far-fetched, like I'm grasping at straws, but you need to understand. This is the only explanation that truly fits my experience. When I read about the Alcyon, I felt something deep within my bones. These were my demons. I knew it with absolute certainty. And yet, with that knowledge, only came more questions. Which one had been invading my life, causing so much pain? Further research revealed something that sent a shudder through my entire body. It scares me to even say this, but the Alcyon do not always work alone. They exist as a group, collaborating to cause maximum suffering. They latch on, feeding on pain, ensuring any respite is only temporary. No wonder I only experienced brief moments of relief before the torment would return. I'm not dealing with a single entity. In fact, I am battling all of them. I cleanse myself of one, only for another to take hold. I had believed they'd left me, but now I see the truth. They were never truly gone. They were lurking in the shadows, waiting for a moment of my weakness, orchestrating events to fracture my resolve so they could return. And they have been busy. I feel foolish for ever believing the Alcyon had left me, especially after their first evil attempt to break me. In August 2023, my mother became unwell. Like anyone would, she visited her GP. She was told she had a chest infection, prescribed antibiotics. After 2 weeks, her chest was clear, but but she still felt awful. I urged her to book another appointment, but she assured me she already had a follow-up scheduled. She asked me to accompany her to that appointment. I could see she was worried. I did my best to console her, even joking that if she didn't calm down, I'd bring her 2-year-old grandson, Michael, over to jump up and down on her until she cheered up. We sat in the eerily empty waiting room. As we chatted, I glanced over at the children's area. It was darker than the rest of the room, as if a thin veil had been placed over it. If something looks dark and feels dark, then it likely is dark and holds no good intentions. A wave of nausea hit me. Sweat gathered on my forehead. My skin turned pale. I was hit with a wave of flashbacks, taking me back to the moment my son Jack woke after his surgery to remove part of the terminal brain tumor. I struggled to ground myself, desperately trying to latch onto one of my senses to pull me out of the torment I was trapped in. Then, suddenly, my mum offered me a mint. That small act snapped me back. I put that mint as my anchor, focusing intently on its every detail. Slowly I used those sensations to steady myself. My mind shifted. How had the Alcea reattached? I'd been so careful, meticulously keeping my emotions in check to prevent them from returning, to feed. And yet, here they seemingly were. "Are you all right?" my mum asked, concern etched on her face. I'd shared my experience with her, even sending her the podcast so she could fully grasp what I was going through.
I think they're back, Mum," I said, gesturing towards the corner of the room.
She followed my gaze, her eyes scanning the area carefully, as if trying to find a rational explanation for what I was experiencing.
"I don't get what you mean. It looks fine to me," she said.
Her response unsettled me. Not only was my mother a fellow believer, but she'd also had her own encounters. Mild, but experiences nonetheless. I had been certain she could see what I could see.
"Are you sure you can't see anything?" I pressed.
She nodded, offering me a soft, reassuring smile. Just as I was about to respond, a green stacking block toppled from a shelf and rolled across the floor. I turned to my mum with an unmistakable, "I told you so," look, but she simply brushed it off.
"Oh, that's just Jack and Tommy playing," she said dismissively.
I wasn't convinced. Since losing Jack in 2016 and Tommy in 2019, I'd become accustomed to small, unexplainable occurrences. A familiar scent wafting through the air. A toy inexplicably moving from where I'd left it. A faint noise in an empty room. But there had never been darkness. Never a sense of malice. Now, that feeling was creeping in, and I could sense the Alcea were watching me, waiting. A few minutes later, my mother and I were sat in the office of Dr. Mahay. Anxiety twisted in my stomach as we took our seats across from her. "This isn't good news, I'm afraid," she began. My pulse quickened. Before I could speak, she continued. "Alice, do you remember the blood tests we done a few weeks ago?" My mother nodded slowly. "But they've come back, and the results aren't great," Dr. Mahay said gently. "Your tests indicate cancer markers," the doctor explained. "We need to conduct further tests and refer you to the oncology department." My mother broke down in tears. This diagnosis had never been on our radar. As we left the surgery, an all too familiar sense of fear and helplessness washed over me.
My mother was now facing a battle not unlike Jack's. But this time, I would not fail. I would not lose her as I had lost my sons. Eventually, the appointment with the oncology team arrived. Dr. Rayner diagnosed my mother with a rare form of lymphoma, follicular T-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The cancer had spread through her immune system, and she would need 6 months of intensive chemotherapy. Before she began treatment, we planned a trip to London to visit our extended family. But as soon as I started the engine, a tyre pressure warning flashed on the dashboard. On checking, one of the rear tyres had been slashed. I refused to let this bad luck ruin what might be Mum's last visit to family for a long time. We quickly switched to my car and set off. As we hit the motorway, the mood lifted. We agreed to stop at the next service station for breakfast. A small moment of normalcy. But fate had other plans. A warning message lit up on my dashboard. Power steering failure. We were only 6 miles from the nearest service station. I gritted my teeth and carefully guided the car there, my heart pounding with frustration and unease. Once parked, I shut the engine off, waited a few moments and tried restarting it. Nothing. The power steering had completely seized. Our trip was cancelled. I called roadside assistance, only to be told my coverage was insufficient. Confused and furious, I argued I had full coverage. I even had the documents to prove it. But they wouldn't budge. In the end, I had no choice but to pay £170 for recovery. When I later investigated, I discovered that when I had renewed my policy a month earlier, the operative had downgraded my coverage but failed to inform me of the change, and I stupidly trusted the documentation that I'd received. This was no longer just a series of coincidences. Something was working against us, and I had no idea how to stop it. Let's take a quick break to tell you about a wonderful product. Did you know there are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our world? From the food we eat to the air we breathe, even the skincare we use, they could be messing with your hormones and making you feel like you're stuck in a mystery of your own. And just like a plot twist in a true crime story or one of those unexpected scary moments in our submitters' experiences, hormonal changes like premenopause or menopause can strike at the most unexpected times. And suddenly you're dealing with mood swings, sleepless nights, and all those other symptoms that make you feel like you're losing control. But here's the good news. This is one mystery you can solve with Happy Mammoth. Just take the 2-minute free quiz from Happy Mammoth, answer a few simple questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can feel like yourself again. The results are impressive. There are over 40,000 reviews on their website. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. According to a survey, 86% of the women started losing weight, 77% say it improved their mood, and the biggest benefit? 100% of the women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DARKPARANORMAL at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DARKPARANORMAL for 15% off today.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS Certified Organic Green Mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
The following week faded into obscurity, consumed by car repairs and prepping my mum for chemotherapy. Amid the chaos, I found solace in your podcast. I reminded myself that these Alcea thrived on suffering and pain. I was feeding them exactly what they needed to latch on. With that in mind, I swore no more. I forced myself to ignore their attacks and focus on the care my mother would soon need. Strangely, my determination seemed to work. The next 6 months became a blur of appointments, blood tests, scans, and relentless rounds of high-intensity chemotherapy. My mother fought through every grueling step, never wavering. Then, after half a year of uncertainty, we finally received the news we never expected. Her lymphoma was in remission. It was the first bit of good news in what felt like forever. Overjoyed, my mother rang the bell in the oncology ward, her victory echoing through the halls. That night, we celebrated with a Chinese takeaway, sharing the relief of our family. But the Alcea weren't finished with me. They were just getting started. With my old car on its last legs, we decided to buy a new one. Our first brand new vehicle. We ordered a Dacia Jogger in a stunning burnt orange colour, excitedly waiting 3 months for its arrival. And when it finally came, it felt like our luck was turning around. Oh, how naive we were. Just 6 weeks later, the car was back in the garage with a bizarre electrical fault. It took 2 weeks to discover that the car had been installed with the wrong software. Problem solved, so I thought. 3 weeks later, I got a call. The car was being recalled for an update to the automatic gearbox. I dropped off the car, expecting to pick it up later that day. But less than an hour after leaving, my phone rang. And the service manager explained that whilst working on my car, their technician accidentally took some paint off one of the wings. It was arranged for my car to be repaired at another garage, and I would be provided with a courtesy car until mine was ready. Once at the car park, we were shown around the vehicle. The scratch had been repaired and looked fantastic. But as we inspected the rest of the car, Mary and I discovered 2 additional scratches on the passenger door. Well, that was it. The rage I'd been suppressing for so long erupted. I had to remove myself from the situation before I lost control completely. I was done. I couldn't fight it any longer. Thankfully, Mary was with me, and she handled the situation whilst I paced outside, speaking aloud to Jack and Tommy, asking them to help me get through yet another difficult time. As I spoke, a warmth surrounded me, an offering of reassurance. On the drive home, I knew what might bring me comfort. As soon as we arrived, I ran upstairs to my bedroom and opened my bedside drawer. There, at the bottom, was my wooden cross and my silver necklace with its crucifix. I reached for the wooden cross, but as soon as my fingers touched it, a wave of pins and needles engulfed my hand. It was as if something didn't want me holding a piece of that wood. Determined, I began reciting the Lord's Prayer. It felt like an eternity, but eventually the sensation in my hand returned. Hastily, I put the cross down and picked up my necklace, fastening it around my neck. I went to the bathroom and splashed my face with cool water. As I gazed into the mirror, I barely recognized the man staring back at me. He was older, weary, his features dull and washed out, as if life itself had drained all the color from his being. I found myself transfixed by his vacant eyes, dark and endless, like 2 blackened pools pulling me into their depths. But then, a sharp pressure jolted me back to reality. A heavy weight on my shoulder. I tried to pull up my shirt, desperate to remove it, but it clung to me like lead, impossible to shift. With effort, I finally managed to tear the fabric away from my body, only to reveal 2 bruises and a crimson mark on my left shoulder. A familiar calling card of the Alcea. Again, I whispered the Lord's Prayer, asking Jack and Tommy to watch over their mother and brothers whilst I confronted my demons. Eventually, the unsettling presence seemed to subside. Determined to seek guidance, I went to my local spiritualist church. As I entered the small hall, the warm glow of the candles flickered and the scent of incense filled the air. I tried to quiet my thoughts, but peace remained elusive, especially when the incense scent vanished, replaced by a musky, damp odour. The kind you encounter when opening a neglected trash bin. A man approached me and introduced himself as David. Before I even spoke, David told me I had a visitor and invited me to sit. The weight of everything crashed down and I broke. The relentless barrage of attacks had shattered my resolve. I poured my heart out and David simply listened, nodding occasionally. I gave him a moment to collect his thoughts before asking, "What should I do?" David cleared his throat. "Continue to pray whenever you feel the presence of the Alcea. Also, get yourself some black tourmaline. It will protect you from negative energy. Promote a sense of safety, stability. It will inspire optimism. Every 4 days, remove the tourmaline and let it sit under the moonlight to cleanse and dispel any lingering negative energy." I thanked David and bought a black tourmaline necklace. As soon as I put it on, I felt a wave of relief wash over me. The next day, the garage called, asking me to come in to discuss the car. Mary and I went together, only to be told they couldn't determine the issue. The car was dismissed as a Friday afternoon car, one hastily assembled at the end of the week when the workers were eager to clock out. Their solution? Return the vehicle in exchange for a new one. The catch? The replacement would take 3 months to arrive. In the meantime, they offered a courtesy car, and as a bonus, a free upgrade to the next model. After everything we'd been through, I couldn't shake my skepticism. But with few options left, it seemed, for once, luck was finally on our side. By the end of September, I was gathering Ben and my mother into my mother's car to attend a wedding. The drive was smooth and the ceremony was breathtaking. The bride and groom a perfect match. The entire day had gone smoothly without a single hitch. Until the drive home. Ben, my mother, and I were travelling towards the M3 past Alton. I was following a couple of cars down a dual carriageway when, out of nowhere, 6 deer dashed across the road, weaving between the vehicles. I slammed on my brakes to avoid them, but it was too late. One of the deer struck the car, damaging the bumper. I quickly pulled over and checked on everyone. Thankfully, we were all unharmed. Stepping out, I walked back to where the deer had crossed, searching the area. But there was no sign of them. The bizarre part was that they had run into an open field that was freshly cut. There would be nowhere for them to hide, except for a sparse hedgerow where I now stood. As I made my way back to the car, I noticed something quite unsettling. The once busy road was now eerily empty. The traffic we had been seemingly part of vanished, replaced instead by an unsettling silence. Then a chilling thought crossed my mind. Could they have been the 6 Alcea? Reminding me of the unseen forces still at play. A shiver ran down my spine. Was I losing my grip on reality? Or was there more to this than met the eye? The next day, I booked the car in for repairs and arranged for a courtesy vehicle. I carefully explained over the phone that my mother required an automatic car, one that wasn't too high due to her mobility issues. We were assured everything was in hand. 2 days later, we arrive at the garage. The staff were polite and professional, and then it came time to collect the courtesy car. And we were led to a high SUV with a manual transmission. I reminded the staff of our specific request, and it turned out that our request had been recorded, but then inexplicably crossed out by someone at the garage without reason. As we approached Bournemouth, the traffic came to a complete standstill. A key route in the area had been closed recently due to an incident, which caused a significant backup. Although we were merely 20 minutes from home, it ended up taking us 2 full hours to get there. The following morning, I get up to take my mother to the hospital and Ben to school. I start the car, and immediately the dashboard flashed low tire pressure. I check, and the rear passenger tire had been slashed open. I was certain the car was fine when I parked it the night before. So, confused, I check my home CCTV footage. No one had approached the car. But, at exactly 3:33 a.m., the recording glitches out. The data remained corrupted until 5:55 a.m. Had someone tampered with the camera? Or had something else, something unseen, been at work? I called the garage explaining the situation. They instructed me to use the emergency inflation foam that came with the compressor. I objected, explaining that the gash in the tire was too severe, but they insisted I try. As expected, it was a wasted effort. 2.5 hours passed before the garage finally admitted their mistake and arranged for the car to be collected and replaced with another. Then it hit me. I hadn't cleansed my black tourmaline in the moonlight. That evening, I removed my necklace and placed it carefully on the windowsill, ensuring it would absorb the cleansing energy. The next morning, I reached for it, and it was gone. Panic surged through me. I searched the windowsill, my drawers, cupboards, even under the bed. It had vanished. I turned to Mary and asked, "Have you seen my necklace?" "You put it on the windowsill last night. It has to be there," Mary insisted. I kept searching until my foot struck something beneath the radiator. Dropping to my hands and knees, I peered underneath. Indeed, it was my pendant, hanging by its leather string at the back of the radiator. Utter confusion settled over me. The radiator was positioned beneath the windowsill and was covered by a wooden cover, making it impossible for the pendant to have simply fallen and landed at that angle. The only logical explanation was that someone had picked it up and deliberately placed it there. I retrieved my pendant, and that night I carefully tied it to the window handle, ensuring it was secure and could not be removed. The following morning, relief washed over me when I saw the pendant was still in place. But as I examined it more closely, my stomach dropped. The leather cord was twisted, as if the pendant had been spinning. Despite my unease, I reassured myself that whatever had tried to interfere had failed. I deemed the pendant cleansed, put it back on, and felt an immediate sense of relief. I accompanied my mother to her follow-up appointment with Dr. Rayner. When she finally entered, she wasn't alone. Emma, an oncology nurse, followed close behind. The moment I saw their solemn expressions, my stomach knotted. The appointment did not go well. Although Mum's cancer was in remission, new mutations had been discovered in her bone marrow. Dr. Rayner explained that this condition, myelodysplastic syndromes, or MDS, was common in lymphoma survivors, However, Mum's case was different. One of the mutations was extremely rare. If triggered, it would rapidly progress into acute leukemia, a condition with a devastatingly low survival rate. A bone marrow transplant was now the only option. But even with the transplant, there were no guarantees. If her body rejected the new marrow, the treatment would fail. And even if it succeeded, the mutations could still return. Stunned, I instinctively reached for my crucifix and my black tourmaline pendant. My fingers grasped only the chain. Both pendants were gone. Panic surged through me. My eyes darted around the room, searching the floor, my clothes, anywhere they might have fallen. Nothing. Dr. Rayner and Emma noticed my distress. "Did you lose something?" one of them asked. Embarrassed, I forced a smile. No, I'm just trying to get comfortable." I couldn't let this distract from the more pressing issue at hand, figuring out the next step for Mum's treatment. After the appointment, we walked silently through the hospital, and once outside, Mum turned to me. "What's wrong?" "I've lost my necklaces," I admitted. We retraced our steps back to the car, searching along the way, but they were nowhere to be found. "I'm sure you'll find them," Mum reassured me. "They probably just fell off at home." I nodded, though doubt gnawed at me. Unlocking the car, I helped her into the passenger seat before heading to the trunk to dismantle her mobility scooter. As I lifted the boot lid, my breath hitched. There, in the exact center of the trunk, lay my black tourmaline pendant and silver crucifix, perfectly stacked, the leather string still tied to the tourmaline. I froze, my mind racing to comprehend how they'd ended up there. The only thing that snapped me out of my daze was Mum's voice. "Do you need a hand?" No, I'm okay," I stammered, quickly pocketing the necklaces. I walked to the driver's side and sank into the seat and took a deep breath. "What's wrong, son?" my mother asked gently. I hesitated before pulling the necklaces from my back pocket and showing them to her. "Oh, you found them. Where were they?" I told her, and her face paled. And for a moment, she was speechless. Then, her expression hardened with determination. "You need to find someone who can help you get rid of these beings once and for all." With Christmas fast approaching, Mary and I did our best to make it special. But despite our efforts, the Christmas spirit felt distant. Christmas rolled into New Year, and with cautious optimism, I looked ahead, hoping for a fresh start. January passed without any major incidents, just a string of minor annoyances that I dismissed as mere bad luck. But February was different. It brought new challenges and, ultimately, the devastating news that compelled me to reach out to you again. Having a small child and a teenager often meant that Mary and I rarely had time for ourselves. This particular Monday was one of those rare moments. We decided to go out for lunch and try a small dim sum restaurant in Bournemouth. We'd been there for barely 30 minutes when my phone rang. It was my teenager's school. Seeing the name on the screen, I felt a flicker of unease. Answering quickly, I was met with the voice of his pastoral lead, Mrs. Tilly. "I'm sorry to bother you," she began, her tone unusually solemn. "But there's been an incident, and I feel Ben needs to be collected." A tight knot of anxiety formed in my chest. "Is everything okay?" I asked, my voice edged with concern. Mrs. Tilly slowly took a steadying breath.
the kind I'd heard before from doctors delivering difficult news, from those offering condolences, a breath that signalled something was terribly wrong. "What's happened?" I pressed, my heart pounding. She hesitated, then carefully said, "I'm sorry to tell you this, but one of Ben's close friends was found yesterday. He took his own life." The words hit me like a blow. My mind scrambled, racing through names, trying to grasp who it could be. And then, almost instinctively, one name surfaced. "Was it David?" I asked, though I wasn't sure why his name came first. Maybe some part of me already knew. Silence. Then Mrs. Tilly's quiet, sympathetic voice broke through like a blade. "Yes, it was. But I'm afraid I can't share any more information." "Oh my God," I whispered, the weight of the news crashing down on me. "We're on our way. We'll be there in 15 minutes." Mary, who'd been watching me intently, now looked deeply concerned. "What's happened?" she asked. I took a breath and told her everything. As the words sank in, her eyes welled with tears. "I only saw David last Friday," she murmured, her voice breaking. "He rode home from school with Ben." We arrived at the school gates. Ben was just stood there with Mrs. Tilly. He looked completely lost. "It just broke your heart. He'd already gone through losing his eldest brother Jack in 2016 and baby Tommy in 2019, and now David, right before his GCSEs. It was just so unfair for him to have experienced this much loss." For the next 2 weeks, Mary and I were by his side, trying to help him through the waves of grief, those awful flashbacks to his brothers. David's family chose a small, private funeral, wishing for a deeply personal goodbye. The weight of the day proved almost unbearable for Ben, who sought comfort in the shared grief of his friends at a school remembrance service. Gradually, life began to find a new, albeit altered, rhythm, and Ben began to carry the weight of yet another loss. Seeking a moment of peace, I decided to visit Jack and Tommy at their resting place. The journey to the cemetery, a battle against relentless traffic, felt like a pilgrimage. But any hope of solace was swiftly extinguished. Entering Christchurch, my car was struck by a rogue exhaust black box. A violent impact that shattered the skid pan, mangled my nearside alloy wheel, and obliterated the tyre. After an unending barrage of misfortune, I knew I couldn't dismiss it as mere coincidence. Desperate, I sought some much-needed help, and a friend pointed me towards Diane, a spiritualist. I pinned all my hopes on our appointment for February the 20th, envisioning it as a pivotal turning point. But 10 minutes before our scheduled meeting, my phone rang. Diane, her voice laced with apology, explained that she'd returned home to find a catastrophic flood, making our session impossible. It took a full week before I heard back from Diane. When we finally spoke on the phone, she asked what I needed from her. I was so anxious about scaring her off, I simply told her I needed help. She gave me her address, and on the 7th of March, I was able to go and visit her. I pulled into Diane's driveway. The quiet street a stark contrast to the turmoil within me. Her unassuming 3-bedroom semi-detached house offered a sense of normalcy. A fragile hope. I knocked, and the door opened to reveal a warm smile, an invitation into her sanctuary. She led me to the dining room, where the simple wooden table became our shared space. Diane's gaze, gentle yet penetrating, lingered on me,
Then, with a maternal tenderness that resonated deep within, she spoke. Her soft voice like a whisper. "You're carrying a heavy burden, aren't you?" I could only nod, the weight of unspoken grief pressing down. Without a word, she pulled out a small bag and then took out her tarot deck, placing it on the table before me. She asked me to shuffle the cards. As I picked them up, I suddenly felt a chill fill the room, despite the central heating. My breath caught and I shivered uncontrollably. I was wearing a thick hoodie, but I couldn't shake the cold that seemed to have settled into my bones. My fingers, numb and stiff, fumbled as I shuffled that deck. I returned the cards to Diane's hands. She spread them out and I selected three. She flipped the first two with a swift, confident motion. But the third card seemed to resist her touch. A delicate pause hung in the air, a moment stretched taut with anticipation. Slowly, deliberately, she revealed the card, and a long, drawn-out breath escaped her. A sound heavy with unspoken weight. "You are the first person in 15 years of me doing this who has drawn the shadow card," she said. "Is that good?" I asked, uncertain. Diane gazed at the three cards, then began speaking in a calm but serious tone. I'll keep the specifics of Diane's insights private, but the essence of her message was chillingly clear. I am spiritually linked, which has made me a conduit for spiritual energy, a beacon that draws both benevolent and malevolent presences, and that I'm heading towards a spiritual awakening. Diane then confirmed that a predatory entity periodically drains my emotional energy, leaving me ravaged by frustration, anger, pain, and despair. This validation was immense. I wasn't imagining things. I wasn't losing my mind. This was real. Our conversation turned to defense, strategies to break the cycle. Diane suggested a hematite bracelet, a talisman to bolster my defenses against negativity, whilst inviting positive energy to surround me. Diane's next words resonated deeply, solidifying my belief in her abilities. "The mending of your aura was skillfully done. Whoever helped you knew what they were doing. But breaches are re-emerging." My breath caught in my throat. I hadn't expected her to see the intricate work Bex had performed on my wounded aura. Diane's assurance was a balm to my soul. She would reinforce those repairs, just as Bex had, continuing the delicate work of healing. After our session, I rushed into town, eager to find a hematite bracelet, a tangible shield against the forces that plagued me. Disappointment struck swiftly. No store carried it. I resigned myself to buying one online, opting for next day delivery, a lifeline I desperately needed. With the late hour, the bracelet was slated to arrive on the 9th. I clicked purchase, and a surge of fragile hope battling the ever-present dread. The 9th dawned, and with it a deceptive sense of calm. A notification arrived, delivery between 4:15 and 6. I waited, each tick of the clock amplifying my anxiety. 6 p.m. passed. An ominous silence descended. No updates, no explanations. I contacted customer service, a labyrinth of automated responses and endless hold times. Finally, I was told my order was still languishing at the distribution centre, untouched. Outrage simmered within me. Were the Alcea so determined to keep me ensnared? The representative assured me delivery would happen the next day. I was left with no choice but to endure another night of waiting. That night, I was tormented by night terrors, A macabre procession of faceless figures manipulated by an unseen, malevolent puppeteer. I awoke, drenched in a cold sweat, the residue of fear clinging to my skin. "Today," I whispered, my fingers fidgeting with my tourmaline and crucifix. "This bracelet will arrive." The delivery app became my obsession. The 1 p.m. time, a beacon of hope. When it finally arrived, the white plain poly bag seemed almost mocking in its simplicity. I ripped it open, the silver-like gemstones of the bracelet catching the light. Could this fragile object truly offer protection? With a determined breath, I put it on. Nothing. No celestial fireworks, no instant expulsion of the Alcea. Just a chilling quiet. Then, a sharp burning tore through my right forearm, focused around the bracelet. Crimson welt surfaced on my wrist. My first impulse was to tear it off, but I steeled myself. They wanted me to yield. A wave of resistance washed over me. I documented these disturbing marks with my phone, a stark visual record of the attack, which I will share with you, Kevin. I endured the burning sensation for a grueling hour until, without warning, it simply ceased. Of course, I ran through all the logical explanations, grasping for anything that made sense. Had I scratched my wrist without realizing it? Was it an allergic reaction to the hematite? But no, I couldn't recall scraping it, and besides, my sleeve was covering it the entire time. And an allergy? That didn't make sense either. I didn't have any allergies. I don't have any intolerances. An oh-so-familiar unease settled in. It was just another one of those bizarre, inexplicable events. Another moment that defied reason. And by now, I'd almost gotten used to them. It's been almost a week since I met with Diane, and we've stayed in touch. She told me her work on repairing the voids in my aura was successful, and I should start noticing positive changes soon. Well, today is March the 13th, and I have to say, I'm feeling optimistic. Things have finally settled down, and for the first time in a while, I have a real sense of hope. It's fragile, something I know I need to nurture, but it's definitely there. That said, I can't afford to let my guard down. The moment I do, I risk letting the Alcea in. And I'm not naive. I know this battle is far from over. There will be challenges ahead, moments where I'll need to stay strong and deeply connected to my spiritual state. Lately, I've been looking to my local spiritualist church for guidance, and honestly, it's been incredible. I found a welcoming, supportive community of fellow believers who are helping me explore my spiritual potential. The idea that I might actually be able to tap into and use these abilities feels huge. Like there's this hidden part of me just out of reach, waiting to be uncovered. Thank you again for taking the time to read about my experiences. This community you've built is something special. A safe space for believers, and I'm proud to be a part of it. If you have any questions, feel free to email me. I'd love to hear from you, and of course, I will keep you all updated. Alex. Well, Alex, thank you so much for sending another email following Demon on My Shoulder, and please do keep us updated with what seems to be an ongoing spiritual situation. Or should that be battle? One that you now seem to be gathering the tools to at least have some hope of winning. And I send you nothing but good intent and good wishes with that battle. Recently, on one of our episodes of Dark Bites for our Patreons, I included an experience which was a dream, which is something I don't normally do, and some of our listeners questioned why that was so. I explained it should make sense following the debut of season 20. And hopefully when I read part of that experience out now,
it will resonate with the person who sent the original experience in, and definitely with you, Alex. Because obviously I knew what was coming in the debut season, i.e. this experience from you, Alex, and then I received this email, and one particular part of it sent a shiver down my spine when I read through it. Sheerly because I was dealing with editing Alex's story at the time this came through. And hopefully we all see the correlation between the two. What it is and why it's there, I don't know. I won't pretend I do know. But is it beyond coincidence? Maybe, maybe not. I'll allow you to be the judge. But here is part of that experience. I had the feeling that something bad was coming soon. Moving along to the next part of my dream, I was leaving an indiscernible warehouse and walking home in the dark. As I turned left at the intersection of some residential streets, I noticed what, at first glance, I assumed was a deer, standing in front of a bush and a wooden fence, both taller than this deer. I smiled but did not turn my head away. And this, as well as my assumption, were both mistakes. I apologize for the following description, but I do not wish to withhold details for accuracy purposes. A naked, feminine figure stepped out of the shadows, covering her form as she approached me rapidly from across the street. Her skin appeared to be naturally blood red, her left arm fully extended, with her finger pointed directly at me the entire time. Her ears were large, that you may in fact spot on a deer, but almost tailored to fit the head of a human. She had a look of both satisfaction and seriousness on her face as she did this, and I remember thinking to myself that surely she's both satisfied and pointing a finger of blame at me for being present as the previous doors opened into wherever she or it came from. I gave them the opportunity to come into our world. Now, coincidences or synchronicities, if you will, are something which is of a very deep interest to me. And it was just as I was editing the first part of Alex's information that he'd sent through, i.e. I'd read about his experience discovering the Alcea, how they were described as women, and also the encounter with the deer, when I paused that part of my work and started to record Dark Bites. When I reached that section, it seemed to be a little too coincidental. So had this other individual seemingly had a run-in with the Alcea, or even worse, had they invited them in a dream state into their life? I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one. But Alex, thank you so much for being the debut episode of Season 20. And as explained at the beginning, if you have your own paranormal experience that you wish to share with the show, the new way to submit your experiences can be found in the show notes below or by visiting thedarkparanormal.com and submit your experience. And as we say each season, although the season is mapped out in terms of content, if the right experience comes through, we will find a place for it in this season. The fluidity of this show is something that we pride ourselves on. If the right experience comes through, I want you guys to hear it first and foremost. So once again, the contact at thedarkparanormal.com can still be used for your feedback, your comments, suggestions for Dark Realms episodes. But if you're going to include an experience you want reading out, please do it via the website, which is again in the links in the show notes, or by visiting the website thedarkparanormal.com. For our Patreons, I'll speak to you again on Sunday for another episode of Dark Bites. And for everyone else, I will speak to you for our first mini-sode of the season on Wednesday coming. And don't forget, if you'd like to become a Patreon member, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But until next time, remember, whenever you discuss the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time right here on The Dark Paranormal.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively to Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.